Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Hellas Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with M.O. Walsh, whose wonderful new novel, his second, is the Big Door Prize. We'll also have some advice for folks who are looking to donate books. It's a great pleasure to welcome Neil M.O. Walsh back to The Reading Life. He was born and raised in Baton Rouge and is the author of two novels. His first was My Sunshine Away. He currently directs the Creative Writing Workshop at the University of New Orleans, and today we're talking about The Big Door Prize, his absolutely delightful second novel. Neil Walsh, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Well, thanks. It is awesome to be here. Great to hear your voice.
Oh, I love the Big Door Prize. Who could resist that title from a John Prine song? So tell us about choosing that title.
Well, it kind of came to me about halfway through writing the book, I guess. I've been a John Prine fan for a while, ever since me and my wife met about 20 years ago when she introduced me to his music. And ever since then, he's just become sort of an important voice in my life. And as I was writing the book, I sort of realized what I wanted to go for, which is the sort of tone of the book being one that whenever there is tragedy, you know, it looks it in the face, but at the same time also celebrates all the things that we don't really celebrate enough, which is actual true love and people caring for one another and earning the hard-won emotions that we build our lives around. And he's a songwriter that's always sort of had a wink in his eye, I think, whenever he sings about these things. He sort of celebrates all of our quirks and foibles, if you will. And as I was writing the book, I was like, there's something I'm trying to achieve here that I realized the reason I'm attracted to it is because I've been listening to it for so long, and it's helped me in my life. And so he sort of became a model. And you know, as I would listen to his music, and as I was writing these drafts, I guess I wrote this book for about 4 years. I started realizing, man, there's a lyric, there's a John Prine lyric that would just match this chapter. There's a John Prine lyric that would match this situation. You know,
yeah.
He had a 50-year career, so he's got lots of great songs. Once I had that idea, it made so much sense, and it felt right, and everything just sort of clicked into place. And In Spite of Ourselves, the song that the title comes from, it was me and my wife's wedding song, too. So it's always, to me, it's like my favorite love song in the world. It's celebrating this sort of weird little couple that recognizes that they're the big door prize. You know, they're the great thing that they want in life. And so I was really attracted to that idea.
Against all odds, we should say we're the big door prize.
That's right.
Celebrate sticking it out, that's for sure. So talk about the premise of this novel, which holds such comic and tragic potential from the very first.
Yeah, so the idea behind the novel is that it's set in a small town called Deerfield, Louisiana. It's a fictional town, but small enough to where everyone sort of knows each other and they go to the same grocery store and all that. And one day this new machine shows up at this grocery store. It looks sort of like a photo booth, sort of innocuous looking. But it says that what it can do is analyze a person's DNA and sort of report back to them what their sort of body and mind are sort of capable of doing, right? If everything would have worked out right, what their sort of DNA genetic code tells them that they could have accomplished. And so it's sort of a far-out idea, obviously, but people start trying it in town, and, you know, the first couple that get it, one example is a woman gets one that says she should be an entrepreneur. And so she says, you know, I've always sort of wanted to, like, open up a snowball stand.
Right.
And does this, and the next thing you know, there's, like, a line around the block, right? So enough people get these readouts, what they're called, from the machine. There's, like, a little blue ticket that typically has just one or two words on it saying, like, what their potential life station could be, what they could have been. Enough people get these that they interpret them in a way that works, that everyone starts getting curious. And so next thing you know, just about everyone in the town is trying it. And, you know, like you said, sometimes the comic result and sometimes the sort of, I don't want to say disastrous necessarily, but it sends people in different directions. And so our main characters are a married couple that have been together happily for a while, 15 years or so. And they each get readouts that send them in emotionally very different directions. And so the sort of heart of the book is watching people try to figure out how to square, you know, their realities with their dreams, and also understanding sometimes that their realities have become their dreams. That's really it.
The husband in the couple, Douglas Hubbard, is a high school teacher, and he's a little bit afraid to see what that machine would spit out. And I think I'd be like Douglas, actually.
Yeah, it's been really interesting, you know, talking to people, because everyone wants to think, what would I want mine to say? You know?
Yeah.
I think most of us have some sort of dream out there that we're always sort of in the back of our mind. Well, I wonder if I should have tried this, or I wonder, if I could have done this. And I think what a lot of people do is sort of hold on to those things that they've never tried, because, you know, that means they've never failed at them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it feels good to have never failed at a dream. But when some of these people get these readouts and it suggests things that they thought about doing before, it becomes harder for them to ignore that sort of, you know, tug, right, of what could be. But as I was writing the book, I think a lot of those scenarios come easily. In other words, if you just make up a character, you know, that's been a farmer or something for his whole life, and you put him in this booth and you could spit out anything, you spit out a ballet dancer, right? Well, you might suddenly have a really funny sort of scenario about how this person is going to interpret it. But what I got really interested in are people who, you know, might walk into that machine and not necessarily get something depressing, but perhaps get something that says they've already reached their potential.
Right.
And what would that do to someone? I think a lot of people from the outside would say, wow, that's amazing. You know, you should celebrate that. But I think the person who gets that readout might feel sort of cheated that there's nothing else out there for them.
Is that all there is? I mean,
they've already maxed it out.
Yeah. Oh, man. I want to talk about Gypsy Rodrigue, the town driver. So tell us his story, because I find that just one of the best.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. So Gypsy is a guy who was sort of the town drunk for a long time. And then one night was on a sort of bender, and ran his car in the early morning, ran his car into a donut shop. And normally that donut shop would have been filled with kids and families getting their, you know, weekend donuts, but luckily was closed on that day. And the guilt of this and what could have been overwhelms him to such a degree that he decides he's got to quit drinking. But as a lot of people who try to quit drinking do, realize he was not very good at it. And so what he decided instead is that he will drive instead of drink, because he can't drink and drive, because he can't get another DUI. So instead, he'll just drive all the time. So if he's driving all the time, then he can't be drinking. And so what he does is he just sort of starts up his own sort of like taxi or Uber company, but he doesn't charge anybody, just so he can drive all the time and keep himself clean.
The goober Uber. He always shows up at the right time.
It's a small town, so, you know, he's just one guy driving around, always looking for somebody to pick up.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with M.O. Walsh, whose wonderful new novel, his second, is the Big Door Prize. We'll be right back.
She don't like her eggs all runny. She thinks crossing her legs is funny. She looks down her nose at money. She gets it on like the Easter Bunny. She's my baby. I'm her honey. I'm never gonna let her go.
There's a lot of tenderness in this book. There's a lot of close observation. I think about that long, good marriage between Douglas and Sherilyn, and the way they have habits, the way they look at each other, the way they have traditions, the way they want the best for each other. That must have been a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the whole book, this is the most fun writing experience I've ever had.
That's great.
It really was. It was, not to say it's not difficult, because plot, just craft is always difficult and a challenge, I think, if you're doing it right, because you're challenging yourself. But once I sort of had the story and I had my characters, I just enjoyed them so much. You know, I just enjoyed going to work. I mean, I'm sort of out of space now where I miss them. You know,
mm-hmm.
I miss working on the book, as strange as that sounds. But, I'm just the type of person that is an optimist. The people that I've been around in my life, for the vast majority of them are people who love each other and, you know, truly care about each other without an agenda or without, you know, irony. And so a lot of the models that I have in my own family, my own life, are people who do look each other in the eye and, you know, and love each other. So it was fun to write those characters.
And Father Pete Flynn is a really appealing character. He struggles so much with grief and responsibility and warmth for his flock in that town.
He was an interesting character that came sort of late to me. I had actually written a version of this in my first story collection. So, I mean, almost, you know, 15 years ago, probably when I first wrote the idea of this machine. And he wasn't involved in that. It was just Douglas and Sherilyn. But as I started going back, it was an idea that I couldn't let go of, and I knew I wanted to write more about. And as I started populating this world, he popped up. I never thought I was going to write a priest character in my life, I have to be honest. but one time, I remember being at Mass one time, and there was a sort of guest speaker who was a priest, and he talked about the fact that he had had a wife that had passed away before. And I just never, you know, that was just a character that to me seemed just so rich immediately to think about a priest who had been previously married. And so that I got really interested in him. And yeah, I'm glad that you like him. He's one of my favorites, too.
Oh, and it adds such a whole dimension to the way he's able to understand the people around him. But another thing you do in this book, which is so filled with comic possibility, is this portrait of male friendship. And these guys, Douglas, Father Pete, I mean, Tipsy Rodrigue, too, who's one of my favorite characters. You know, just the whole gang, they are really guys looking for friendship, looking for relationship, looking to be able to talk about their lives.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you pick up on that, because that's important to me. It's just, I don't know how to most eloquently phrase it, but just the sort of stupid, arbitrary guidelines that men sometimes feel like they have to operate under in terms of, you know, not being open and honest and vulnerable to their other male friends, if you have to put up some sort of wall and all that. I'm very interested in sort of destroying those systems. I think that too often we just walk around feeling like we have to wear some sort of mask. That's just not true. And so, yeah, a lot of the men in this book are trying to, you know, find that sort of companionship, people they can talk to. And so the book deals a lot with, you know, why are they so interested in this other person? You know, why do they respect? Why does one man respect another?
Mm-hmm.
I think if you watch a movie, it's because that man could beat someone else up. But I think in real life, that's not true at all. You respect people that typically have some sort of attribute maybe that you don't have or that you wish you did, or, you know, something you feel like you could model. There's a lot of that in the book. I appreciate you picking that up.
And they bond over singing and drinking and bad jokes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and bad jokes. That's right. Yeah.
Have you heard the one about us? I mean, that's really great. But one touching aspect of this book is that so much of it touches on aging. And just the way we look at ourselves in the mirror, and we do wonder if we are all we can be. It's a really interesting, tender look at this question. So where did that come from?
Probably just myself looking in the mirror, you know, which is an increasingly depressing experience. You know?
I don't think so. Come on.
Well, no, I mean, I think it initially is for lots of people, but that's what I hope the book is trying to push past and is, okay, so the person who, you know, is told that they've already become the best they can be, to me, they need to realize that it is very possible that they are an awesome human being, right? I mean, it's just too frequent that we think that we should be someone else. We're looking at our flaws, and we're sort of just, that's, you know, whenever you look at your face, you see something different than other people do, right? Because I'm immediately looking at my bald head, right? Other people aren't doing that. And so I think a lot of what the book tries to do is make sure that you're looking at the big picture. And after you're done looking in the mirror, you turn your head and you see the person that's standing next to you. And they're choosing to do that. And they're choosing to be with you because of the decisions you've made up to that point.
Right.
And so that should be celebrated.
Now, there's a lot of action going on in this book all at once. So many things are happening in Deerfield. People are changing on an individual basis and a collective basis. And the town is moving toward this big celebration of its anniversary. Mm-hmm. And also, it's not all brightness and shine there. I mean, there's some personal ambition on the part of some characters, some manipulation on the part of others. And there's also this kind of rippling effects of an act of sexual violence, just as there was in your first book, My Sunshine Away. I think of you now as kind of a poet of small town Louisiana. So talk about writing about those dark things as well and you know, making them part of this picture.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said earlier, I'm an optimist, but I think that the only way that that can translate to a stranger is if the optimism is earned, right? So in other words, if someone just walks around thinking everything is sunshine and roses, they'll be discounted pretty quickly because we all recognize that it's not. And especially, I don't want to say especially right now because it's always been this way, but right now it's, you can't look anywhere without feeling a reason to be pessimistic, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the book does not at all shy away from things that do occur, not only with high school kids and that sort of what goes on now with the, you know, binge drinking and sexual violence and all that, but also, yeah, just what goes on among adults, you know, and people that are unsatisfied and are trying to, you know, get one over on everybody else for their own goals. I'm not at all unaware of horrible things in the world, right? But at the same time, I wanted this book, so I was writing it, to be a sort of antidote to those things. You know, all you got to do is open up your phone to get depressed, right?
So true.
You know, I worked for 4 years to try to give people a reason to not be.
Now, one of the things I love about this book, and you did this in your first book as well, is the way you use the second person. And it's such a lovely way of inviting the reader in. What would you do? You involve the writer and you bring them in right away.
So the book begins and ends that way, with a sort of a communal feel, like we're sort of in this together, the use of the word us in the very beginning. The rest of the book is in third person, sort of alternating characters, but I wanted it to feel like that feeling, like we're on the same side here trying to figure our lives out.
We're all in this together. Come on.
That's right.
Well, I want everything for this book. I want it to be a bestseller. I want it to be a movie. I want it all. So keep that in mind.
Well, I like everything that you're saying.
Oh, well, thank you so much. We've been talking with Neil M.O. Walsh. His new book is The Big Door Prize, and it is wonderful. Don't miss it. Neil, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Susan. This is awesome. Thank you.
Bubble, bubble, hard. A lot of us have been decluttering our houses during these pandemic stay-at-homes, and many of you have asked me where you can donate books. Like everything else these days, that's a bit complicated. So we thought we'd check in with some local organizations to see how they're handling it. The Friends of the New Orleans Public Library, headquartered in the Carriage House behind Ladder Library on St. Charles Avenue, has more stringent policies these days. Dixon Stetler is the executive director of the Friends of the New Orleans Public Library. Dixon, you're open again for donations, so what's the process?
We are quarantining all donated items for 72 hours to keep everyone safe, and we accept book donations, records, CDs, DVDs, just about everything except for we are unable to take textbooks or encyclopedias, and we schedule appointments to accept donations in order to quarantine them for the proper amount of time. And you can send an email or call a phone number to make an appointment. The phone number is 504-345-9563.
Okay.
Or you can send an email, and that's friendsnopl@gmail.com.
Great. And you all are open for business again, aren't you?
We are open, and we have expanded our hours to ensure that there's plenty of time for people to come and social distance, so that our sale is now 3 days a week rather than two. It's Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays from 10 to 2.
Now, one of the things you have coming up is an open-air book sale, and that's coming up soon. And that's really great because at Ladder Library, you have all this space for social distancing.
Exactly. And the weather has just been so glorious lately. We wanted to do something outside, open air. There's plenty of room to spread out and social distance. And we have not 8 million books, but it feels like it. This sale will have our traditional really, really old book sale as part of this open-air book sale. And we have hundreds of antiquated books and out-of-print, signed, first editions, all that good stuff. And we will also have our regular offerings of general fiction, children's books, mystery thriller books, a very large local section. So hopefully there'll be something for everyone.
And that's coming up October 17th and 18th. So tell us about the hours.
Well, on Saturday the 17th at 10 a.m., we will be open for Friends members to get first dibs on all the treasures. And people can join or renew either online beforehand or the day of the sale at 10 a.m. And at 11 a.m. on Saturday the 17th, we'll be open to the public. And we will go until 4 p.m. that day. And then on Sunday, the 18th, we'll be open from 10 to 2.
And you want clients to take some precautions, don't you?
Absolutely. Masks will be required, and admission may be limited to ensure social distancing.
And people can be assured that all the items in the book sale have been quarantined for at least 14 days.
Correct.
So you're doing your best.
Correct. We will have sanitizing stations, then the whole works.
Now, another great option for donating books are the little free libraries you see as you drive around town. And you can find a map of New Orleans Little Free Libraries at friendsnola.org.
Yes, and any Little Free Library stewards in Orleans Parish that need books to fill their libraries, we are happy to give them a box or two of free books.
Oh, that's so generous. So how are the books donations coming in? Are you getting a lot as people clean out their houses?
We are getting a tremendous amount of donations these days. I think most everybody in town cleans their house at some point during the past 6 months, stuck at home. And so we are seeing the fruits of that labor. We are overrun with donations in the best possible way.
Well, keep up the great work. And we should say that there are rain dates for the book sale as well. So if it gets rained out on the 17th and 18th, you can come the next weekend, the 24th and the 25th. And check out friendsnola.org for more information or to join ahead of time. Peg Phelps works hard every year on the Friends of the Jefferson Public Library Big Book Sale, but things are a little different this year. So what are you all doing, Peg?
Well, we are working sorting books and pricing books and packing books and hoping and praying that we will be able to have a sale sometime, maybe next spring.
And how can people donate to the book sale?
We are accepting books by donation only so that we can quarantine them properly. So either call 455-2665 for an appointment or email us at friendsjpl@yahoo.com. And now if you have just a few books, we do have our bins open. They are located at the main Jefferson Parish Library at 4747 West Napoleon Avenue.
And now to join the Friends and to find out more information, people can go to friendsofjeffersonlibrary.org. This year's Symphony Book Fair was canceled, and they will be regrouping for 2021, but they're still accepting donations at their warehouse at 8605 Oak Street on Tuesdays and Fridays between 10 and 2, but the process is stricter there now too. Masks are required, and donations of 10 boxes or more require an appointment. To schedule one, email BetsyHarrison@gmail.com or call the warehouse at 504-861-2004 and leave your phone number. Volunteers will not be able to assist you unloading your car due to COVID precautions. Donors must come prepared to unload everything and carry it into the warehouse. Also, Louisiana Books to Prisoners is not accepting books or holding work nights at this time. As a general rule, textbooks or encyclopedias are not accepted. Please make sure your books are in reasonable condition and never leave books outside these buildings where they will be at the mercy of our unpredictable weather. And if you'd like to try selling your books rather than donating them, check in with one of the many used bookstores in our city, but be sure to call ahead of time. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Chris Joseph appears in a Zoom conversation with Paul Sanchez to celebrate his book, Life is a Ride, My Unconventional Journey of Cancer Recovery. That's Tuesday, October 13th at 6. For more information, go to GardenDistrictBookshop.com. Hoda Kotb celebrates her book, This Just Speaks to Me, Words to Live By Every Day, with two virtual book tour events, one on Tuesday, October 13th at 7, and Wednesday, October 14th at 8. For more information, go to GardenDistrictBookshop.com. Unlikely Books and Jonathan Penton host a release party for Rodney A. Brown's Type Scenes, which is literature you can dance to. Thursday, October 15th from 5:30 to 7 on Facebook Live at the Unlikely Books page. Emma Walsh is the featured guest at the virtual happy hour Friday, October 16th at 5, sponsored by Garden District Bookshop. And the Friends of the New Orleans Public Library will hold an open-air book sale Saturday, October 17th from 11 to 4, with early admission at 10 for members, and Sunday, October 18th from 10 to 2. It will include children's books, adult fiction and nonfiction, CDs and DVDs, and the always popular really, really old books. Masks are required, entrance may be limited to ensure social distancing, and all items have been quarantined for at least 14 days. The rain date, October 24th and 25th. To renew your membership or join the Friends in advance, go to friendsnola.com/join. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellas Foundation. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.